Hello, everyone. Smart Mouth is returned from hiatus. I am your host, Catherine Spires, and I'm back to grill more people about their favorite foods. Also, the Smart Mouth newsletter is launching this month being October 2019. I will start with a free version, then switch to paid once I've convinced you all that it's worth it. And it won't just be my writing. I'm actually paying other food writers to contribute, and I'm paying them about a dollar a word, which is quite a good rate these days, which is kind of a sad commentary on the state of affairs in journalism, but there it is. So hopefully you'll end up subscribing to the paid version too. You can go sign up for that now at smartmouth.substack.com. Substack is S-U-B-S-T-A-C-K. smartmouth.substack.com. You can also contribute to Smart Mouth via Patreon. That money will go toward podcast costs first, and then the newsletter as well. That's at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. Thank you to our newest patron, Philip Rivera. You are my favorite person today. Okay, one last thing before the show. I'm going to experiment with Instagram Live. So on Thursday, October 3rd at 4 p.m. Pacific time, I will be there answering questions and whatnot. We'll see how it goes. I'm on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast, so come talk to me. Okay, now, finally, the show. Hayes Davenport, a comedy person who writes things and also hosts the podcast Hollywood Handbook, has some very specific ideas about crab cakes. Let us know if you agree. Enjoy! Hayes Davenport, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on Smart Mouth.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Good, I'm glad you're excited. So
I never really talk about food. I realized on my way over here that I almost never talk about it.
Really?
And I'm excited for the opportunity.
How do you almost never talk about food?
I don't know. I just feel like in my day-to-day life, yeah. Like, you know, there's like, oh, there's this new restaurant or whatever, but just like broadly about like food stuff. It's like it's such an untapped vein for me.
Do you discuss with your wife like what you're going to have for dinner?
Not really.
Okay.
We just kind of do it. Like that's, and I like that. Like I wouldn't want to sink a lot of time into, I don't like difficult decisions.
Oh yeah.
And so we'll just be like, so one of us will mention something and then we'll just kind of do it.
Okay. So it's not a big negotiation.
Yeah. But I have thoughts.
You have thoughts.
I do.
Yeah, well, that's good. And you don't get to share them on either of your podcasts?
No.
You do Hollywood Handbook, which mm-hmm. is for the laughs.
Yeah.
And then you do LA Podcasts, which is for the issues.
Being very serious.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys like...
And having big opinions.
Big opinions. Not that it's dull. It's
no,
just like
I mean,
you talk
like...
talk about the issues.
Yeah, for a show about local news, mm-hmm. it's pretty fun, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what, like, other people in that world think of it as, like, the comedy show. Like, in the local... Like, when I...
Yeah.
We went on... Spectrum One, mm-hmm. And they were like, "You guys like to get a little crazy on your show,
oh,
don't you?" And I was like,
God.
"Well, it's like
that's kind of
not really." Yeah, it was fun.
So you're wearing a shirt right now that says Baltimore Pinchy Crabs,
and this is a T-shirt from a third podcast. That thank you so much for mentioning it. I do an NBA show on Patreon as well with my co-host Sean from Hollywood Handbook and our friend Carl Tart, who you know
Carl.
As well. Yes.
We are going to talk about crabs, specifically crab cakes.
Yeah, that was one of my foods. So I did my three favorite foods.
Yes.
I was going to delay the decision and really think about it. And then you sent me a reminder email and I just did it like so quickly and was immediately embarrassed. And the next day wanted to like change them. But I was like, oh, she's probably already done some work on it. So I can't really do that. But I sort of reverted. I didn't understand it for the opportunity it was to like be interesting. And cool. And I just thought about what are the foods that for my entire life have always been like that I've thought of as my favorite food since I was basically a kid.
Okay. But that's fair. Now, you just put a new idea in my head. Do you think that some people who come on my show lie about their favorite foods?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
I never even considered that.
Because, I mean, obviously there's a difference between what is the thing that you get on, like, a day-to-day.
Uh-huh.
The thing I eat the most is probably, like, breakfast burritos.
Okay.
And so, like, there's that standard. But there's also the thing that you, like, appreciate the most but, like, don't get all the time.
Uh-huh.
There's like the exotic, so, like, I thought of a million like cool exotic things and stuff that I make at home so I could brag about that.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really use any of them.
Okay. It was very seafood heavy.
Yeah. I grew up in Massachusetts. So, but like, the reason I think those are my favorites is I cut meat, not professionally, I cut meat out of my diet. Like 6-7 years ago now.
Okay.
And I would like to be vegan. I would love to.
Okay.
But I can't really. I've tried.
It's, yeah, I feel the same way. Being vegetarian is whatever. Being vegan, oof.
Yeah.
That's rough.
So I'm pescatarian.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to be vegetarian, mm-hmm. too. But these things are the things that, like, make it hardest for me to be vegetarian. And so I think that means they are my favorite foods.
All the seafoody
that I would like to stop eating them. And
but why
and
would can't. You like to stop eating them?
Well, some of the things, like, we'll get into more detail, but it's just easy. Like, first of all, for decision making, I love having less options on a menu.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you all do it. That you would go into, like, the Cheesecake Factory or, like, Jitlada or whatever, and there's like 500 things, and they're all, you can eat any of them.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's also interesting that your reference points for restaurants are Cheesecake Factory and
those
Jitlada.
Are the two. Yeah, those are the two restaurants. But those to me are the two long menu restaurants.
Yes, for everyone outside of LA, Jitlada is a very famous Thai restaurant that has ridiculously spicy food.
Yeah,
I actually can't eat at Jitlada, essentially.
And they oh really?
Too spicy for me.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm like, come on, this is a joke.
I made that mistake once getting something. It was like a frog leg curry. Years ago, and it was like it was the end of my day. It was like lunch, and I could not, like, basically do anything for the rest of the day.
Yeah,
it was so bad. But they have a thing where it's like 4 pages of like their main foods, mm-hmm. with pictures and stuff, and then like 3 more pages of like basically 11-point font like list of like 400 more things.
Yeah.
That I think are not, like, are only for the people that really know Southern Thai cuisine or whatever.
That's certainly how it started, but then Jonathan Gold,
yes.
our beloved food critic, he really blew that spot up. So everyone goes in there knowing about the secret menu.
Yeah,
now.
They pick, like, the very specific things.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, and that, and I think that's where most of the really painful stuff is.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. I was only giving you a hard time about wanting to go vegan because I've been thinking so much lately about how being vegetarian or vegan is not in and of itself a solution. You still have to be such an informed consumer if your goal is to save the planet.
Sure.
There's still so much mental energy that has to be spent.
But I do take some pressure off myself just because for like beef,
uh-huh.
you know, like beef alone, for me, initially, it was like water use. Like the difference in water, even between beef and pork, is crazy. And in terms of like basic emissions, you do obviously still have to be like an aware consumer.
Right.
But I also, in the early years of not eating meat, I only ate like pizza and cake, basically. It was that thing where like, oh, if I'm making this like good decision, I can do whatever I want.
Yes.
And be healthy and like a good citizen. And I, had to like make a lot of changes.
Like remember vegetables?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I tweeted something recently just about like being dehydrated all the time or drinking a lot of water or something like that. And someone really came at me hard and said that I'm wasting water by drinking water. I should be eating fruit instead. And I thought, well, that's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
But to make the fruit.
Exactly.
You need to put the water on it.
So much more water goes into growing fruit than just
definitely
drinking water.
Definitely more than ends up in your body
exactly.
when you eat it.
And I just thought, oh boy, my work here is not done. There's so much more to teach people.
But it does bug me. Like, people do the other, they swing to the other version of that where they're like, did you know, like, for each almond, it takes like 1.1 gallons of water?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, a 16 ounce steak is a year of showers. You cannot shower for a year.
Huh.
And that's the water use of a 16 ounce steak.
I know. It's all so complicated. That is the thing, is that the more a person learns about food, the more they're like, well, I shouldn't eat that. I shouldn't eat this. Shouldn't eat that. I don't know what's okay.
Well, one of the things on my list, I think, is one of the okayest foods.
Which one was that?
Little neck clams. And, like, basically all, like, mussels.
Yes.
Oysters, like,
the
shellfish.
Bottom feeders, essentially.
Bottom feeders,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. You just drop a rope in the water, pretty much,
mm-hmm.
and they just sort of appear on it.
Yeah.
And you just lift it out, and they filter the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, those, I think, are really good foods.
That makes sense.
The
yes.
kind of things that we would never, if we hadn't been eating them for centuries, I don't think we would now be like, oh, let's eat this, like, little, like,
yeah.
snot blob.
Everybody's but, ancestors were so brave.
Yeah.
They just, like, they had a leap of faith, like,
yeah.
every time they ate something.
And they figured out how to make them
yeah.
edible.
Yes.
Where, like, you can't just eat them right out of the shell. They're,
yeah.
They would be, I can't imagine how gross they would be.
And then they made them edible, and then later on they made them, they gussied them up, essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is what crab cakes are. They're, like, the gussied
yeah.
up version of something that I think tastes real good just on its own. I think
just
crabs
straight
just,
up crab. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, living on the East Coast, did you have more experience with blue crab? I asked because I think until I was like 20, I didn't understand that there were other edible crabs beyond Dungeness crabs.
So, yeah, my mom's from Maryland,
mm-hmm.
And my grandparents lived in Maryland and Florida.
Okay.
So, it was either a blue crab, like, farther north, and then, in Maryland, but then in Florida, stone crab, which
uh-huh.
they don't really make crab cakes out of.
Right.
But, in Maryland is the one, like, the jumbo lump, like,
yeah.
the really, really good ones.
Yeah.
And in general, like, I find crab cakes, it's like a go-to for me at restaurants, but it's the biggest distance between, like, a good and bad version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the really, really bad ones are, like, the worst thing you
yeah.
can eat.
Yeah.
People say, like, there's no bad, like, pizza and, like, certain things on the menu, you
right.
know, are going to be, like, really safe. But, like, certain crab cakes, the really thin, like, patties with, like, the tiny little, like, crab strands
yeah.
and, like, weird mayo elements inside that are, like, tasteable. It can be, like, so awful.
And,
the worst.
And then the trick of putting a ton of breadcrumb in it, so it's, like, more breadcrumb than crab. That's
yeah.
also a bummer.
Yes, a huge bummer. I do like when I make them at home,
uh-huh.
and I do use, like, the straight up, like, Ritz crackers as, like, the filling.
That sounds good.
It's great.
It's got more going on than, like, panko crumbs or something.
Yeah, definitely. And I think of that as, like, kind of a Maryland thing. Like, my aunt and grandma would make them that way. But yeah, you need just the huge, like, giant rocks of crab, like,
yeah,
the huge lumps.
For sure. Would you choose crab cakes over just, like, steamed crab?
Like, that I'd have to pick myself?
No, if it were on a menu.
Steamed crab on a menu?
Have you never, like, been to a restaurant that just had just a whole crab on the menu?
I don't think I've ever, so, like, I got a little traumatized by, as a kid, going to visit my family, and they would just have, like, steamed crabs that we would have to pick.
Yeah, I did that too.
And it is not, I don't think it's worth it. It's really painful. You don't, you, like, you have to eat, like, a huge, like, pile of rice pilaf or something to, like, fill up. Because the amount you get out of it is like a thimble.
Oh, yeah. Again, I keep forgetting because I'm picturing Dungeness crab, West
yeah.
Coast crab.
Yeah.
And those
These
are big,
like,
suckers.
Pretty meager.
Yeah.
Lobster, too. I mean, that was such a New England thing. And I never, you, like, eat the tail and then it's really diminishing returns from
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I don't think lobster claw tastes very good.
Lobster claw is not great.
I'm glad we're in agreement on
this. I agree.
This.
It's the butter. What you like is the
butter.
The butter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And like, my, you know, like the real New England people would be like, oh, it's the legs that are great. You have to take each one of the legs one by one and like squeeze the little inside out of them. And like, those are really good. My grandma used to suck the entire head out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that good. It's like,
so
the
that's
tail.
Not your vibe.
No, the tail is good. And then the rest you can just throw away. It's like, for, it's not worth your time or.
There's lots of different parts of crustaceans that are either, I mean, like crab fat, which is basically like some of their organs and stuff like that. That's either a delicacy or something to be thrown away. I think depending on largely how you were raised, but also tastes and
that's
stuff
interesting.
Like that.
I don't know if we ever did anything with the crab fat.
Mm-hmm.
So you like render, you like pull out the organs and like render those?
Yeah. Or, I mean, there's various different ways of doing it, mostly cooking it into things. I guess some people eat it plain, but I think because it has a really strong flavor, so if you get like a seafood pasta, say, mixing it in there with the noodles, I think actually tastes amazing
because
you're getting just like that hit of seafoodiness.
Yeah. I've never, I'll always just get the can, the really expensive.
Okay.
Like, it's like a $50 can.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it goes a pretty long way.
Right. And that is the way that most people get crab.
Yeah.
Is like in a container already. It's already been cooked and cleaned and all that kind of stuff. I was thinking about my experience with crab, which is the Dungeness that we'd pick ourselves out of the water. And I realized that, in the Pacific Northwest, we're more afraid of quote unquote red tide than traditionally other places have been, which is just the algae bloom that can kill you.
We had that on Cape Cod.
Yeah. So that might be part of it too, is the fear of being paralyzed to death after eating, because it's more likely to be in like the organs and the fat and all that kind of stuff than it is to be in the meat. So I think that's why we never ate it growing up. We would call every morning, you check the tide report and see if it's red tide.
I was my first job was like at a local newspaper on Cape Cod. My first summer job, I wrote obituaries and covered like kid sports.
Oh, the beginning and the end.
Yeah. But like those red tide summers, every single day, it was like updates on.
Yeah.
On this kind of people freaked out.
Because it can either like, you can get like lockjaw for an hour or you could. Truly, your body shuts down slowly enough that you know it's happening, and your lungs stop working.
And I think it just kills a ton of the fish and like crustaceans as well, right? So even just the supply, is messed up.
Also that, but I wouldn't care about that. I'd be like, I'm just gonna avoid the whole situation.
I remember, there's a place called the Clam Man that closed
one
summer, came back, but I remember it was just like sign on the thing that said like red tide. We can't.
That's it. End of story.
No more clams.
Yeah.
No more clam man.
Yeah. Oh, poor clam man. So crabs actually live in every single ocean. There's also
every ocean.
Mm-hmm. There's freshwater crabs. There's land crabs. And I guess you define a crab by having a thick exoskeleton.
Okay.
And two pinchers.
Two pinchers.
Yep.
Nothing like certain number. They have different numbers of like legs.
Apparently
and stuff.
The legs don't matter.
Wow.
It's pinchers. That's the deal. Okay. So the smallest crab is called the pea crab.
Okay.
And it's a parasite on bivalves.
Oh, I feel like I've seen those in like tide pools and stuff.
Yeah,
like
could be.
Around.
I mean, little. No, even tinier.
Oh,
tiny,
not
tiny.
Visible.
Yeah. Teeny little things. Maybe a little visible.
Yeah.
The biggest is the Japanese spider crab.
Mm-hmm.
Which has a leg span of up to 13 feet.
Wow.
Nightmarish, I think. That scares me. But it's also a delicacy.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that's similar to like a snow crab, kind of the spiny ones that are like freaky and disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really good. They're like a little sweeter. Have you been that place, the Boiling Crab?
You know, I've never been to one of those places.
It's great. It is also really expensive. But they just dump basically what looks like trash all over your table and you just like go to work on it with like plastic gloves and stuff and slice your hands open over the course of like 3 hours. But it's really, really good. And they do like the huge snow crab legs in a bag that are the greatest.
Are they? See, I really am a crab snob. And so
you don't like those?
I don't think they taste as good as Dungeness crab.
Wow.
Yeah. Also fresh. That's the other thing, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. What is it? It doesn't say what percentage, but like I said, most of the stuff comes from cans and plastic containers, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like fresh or nothing. I was spoiled growing up.
Sure.
Going to a place in Washington State called Hood Canal every summer. And
you can taste the difference between like the pasteurized ones. I mean, some are even non-refrigerated. They can just like sell them.
Ooh, that seems like a bummer.
But I think some of the Trader Joe's ones are just basically canned like tuna.
Oh, okay, right. Canned, yeah.
But those don't taste as good as the ones that are in the like fridge seafood section. They're like legit good canned products. I think there's a brand called Handy that is like fine.
My understanding is that the difference is whether they're frozen or not, because if you freeze crab when it thaws out, it's necessarily more watery now because it just like absorbed all the water.
Yeah.
That's how it
thawed. For cakes.
Yeah. So 20% of all marine crustaceans consumed worldwide are in fact crabs. So we consume 1.5 million tons of crabs annually.
20%.
Mm-hmm.
That includes shrimp?
Yeah. So, wow. I mean, obviously,
it's bigger than I would think. I would think shrimp would be like 90 plus on its own.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right?
They're so expensive, though. I don't know. This whole genre of food is pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So tell me how you feel about when people say like, oh, this animal doesn't have a central nervous system. It doesn't feel pain.
I love it. I mean, I read the David Foster Wallace essay and everything, but I developed, so this is so pathetic. When I was first not eating meat, I made up these like fake rules for like why it was okay that I was still eating fish.
Okay.
And I was like, well, fish don't like play. Fish don't enjoy life.
Okay.
In the way that like mammals play. I don't think like chickens or birds. I mean, some birds
but
do.
Here's the thing. Here's a thing I've been thinking about a lot in the last couple of years. Animal videos. You know how we just see animal. You don't even have to be looking for them on the internet.
Yeah. The freaking dodo just shows
yes,
up in your
Yes, it just
feed.
Shows up everywhere. And I think something that we're learning from that is that, for instance, chickens do remember their favorite people and will run up when the school bus arrives.
Yes, that's right. There are a lot of good chicken stories, but I don't eat chicken.
Yeah.
So that to me confirms
my
habits.
So are you still convinced that fish don't have
feelings?
I
have not really seen any evidence to the contrary. You never hear stories. There's that goose in Echo Park that every time this one guy showed up, the goose had like fallen in love with a human.
Yeah.
And would like go for walks around the lake with it and stuff and was like obsessed with it. I've never heard a story like that about a fish.
Yet. We don't know.
If it happens, I'll cut out whatever that fish.
You'll go species by species.
I won't eat that specific fish, not even species.
I promise that not to
fish,
eat Harold.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. So that is something that I think we tell ourselves, especially about crab, because they're delicious and we want to eat them.
And the way that we eat them is so fucked up of like dropping it in.
Yeah.
Although, dropping it alive into boiling water.
I don't like that. And then I found out there's even more horrible ways of killing them. Like, for instance, if you want to roast all the organs, you have to kill it. You have to get it all separated while it's still raw.
Uh-huh.
So some people kill the
raw
crabs.
Raw being alive.
Yes.
Yeah.
They kill the crabs by just sticking the knife in under the shell and pulling the shell
I've seen
off.
That.
We don't have to eat everything.
But this is like, that's also the story we tell about beef too. It's like, oh, they're being killed. The stun gun or whatever. They don't feel anything as if like everything is so great for
them. I know. That's all lies we tell ourselves, I'm convinced, just to make it feel better to eat meat.
Yes.
Another practice is twisting the claws off while they're still alive and throwing them back in the water. Yes. Because the idea is that the claws regenerate.
Oh, okay.
Which I think that is true, but I also have this vision, and I didn't talk to any crab experts about this, but like I feel like every time you grow a new claw, it's probably a little bit weaker, and the shell's a little bit thinner. It can't come back at full strength.
That is, I'm so sad to think about.
Right? It is.
Yeah.
It is. But once you get past killing them, mm-hmm. we've got the grades of meat. There's jumbo lump.
Yes.
That's the good stuff.
And then, so let me see if I can get this.
Okay.
Jumbo lump.
Mm-hmm.
Regular lump.
Yep.
Fin.
Yes. Sometimes called back fin.
Back fin.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What's next?
Just the claw meat.
Claw meat.
Which is interesting.
Those are the really stringy.
Yeah, well, probably depending on how it's cooked, because okay. it's the equivalent of dark meat.
Mm.
So I actually think
that's the cheapest.
But it's like, it's the stuff that you would put in dishes like a soup.
Okay.
Because it has the strongest flavor, because it has the uh-huh. most fat and the most oil.
Mm.
So I kind of sometimes feel like these classifications are based on certain cultures' decision about what is high quality.
Okay.
Because to my mind, like, if it tastes really crabby, that's a good thing.
That is good. I mean, the texture is a part of it for mm-hmm. like a cake, and even for like a crab soup. Like, the difference between getting like strings and like the satisfaction of like a legit crab lump
yeah.
to me is very significant.
Yeah. Yeah, jumbo lump is good. This is one of the rare episodes that I'm actively like getting hungry talking about. It doesn't always happen. It would ruin me if it happened every time, but yeah.
We don't have great access to it in LA.
No.
Is an unfortunate thing.
No.
The place that I know where like reliably has like pretty good stuff is like Santa Monica Seafood, which is one of the most expensive places
yes.
on earth.
Yeah, definitely. And then there's Connie and Ted's in West Hollywood, but that's expensive as well.
Yes.
And it's meant to be East Coast style. We don't have like a... Well, I guess West Coast seafood is really actually Chinese seafood and, mm-hmm. and sushi.
Right.
Also, like, it doesn't... There's no Anglo equivalent.
I have a crustacean story about the San Gabriel Valley.
Yes.
I went for my father-in-law's birthday uh-huh. a couple years ago to one of the really good places, Ocean Star, like one of the, like, the really good places out there.
Uh-huh.
And I had read somewhere like, oh, you got to try the lobster at this place. Like, the lobster is amazing. And my father-in-law doesn't eat lobster, but everyone else at the table, I was like, we should get one and just kind of like each try a little bit of it.
Yeah.
And so I order it without even looking at the menu. It shows up and it's like a small dog of size.
Oh, wow.
It's like enormous. And it costs $275 because
oh.
it's like a meal. It was like a whole meal. And
yeah.
we'd order all this other stuff too. My father-in-law can't even eat this.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, please let me pay for this. I feel so bad, but I don't really want to because it was so expensive.
Uh-huh.
And I was absolutely like, I've never been so mortified because I had really, really pushed hard to order this $275 item.
Was it like a market price by the pound situation?
I checked the menu after. I mean, it was the only, like, going in, I was like, well, we have to order this. I didn't even check. Like,
yeah.
Look at the lobster. It's like a special occasion.
Did it taste good?
It was amazing.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Good. At least there's that.
So big. I've never encountered, and whole, like, you know,
right.
they bring it out whole. I've never seen anything like that in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably worth it.
Now, and the story alone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So crab cakes, they really are truly associated mostly with Maryland.
Yeah.
And that does seem to be where everything coalesced together
yeah.
to make crab cakes as we know and mm-hmm. know them today.
Mm-hmm.
And the ingredients change depending on what part of the country you're in and what kind of crabs are indigenous
right.
to that area.
There are a few. I mean, Phillips is like a chain there that's like a huge, like Phillips crab cakes are like the standard ones.
Okay.
They sell them, of course, in like grocery stores and stuff, but also you can like go to Phillips and get the crab cakes. G&M is another big one that is probably my favorite.
Oh, okay.
My aunt ships them to me sometimes.
Oh, that's nice.
And they have a great crab soup too. And there's a place called Fadley's. I don't know if it's still around, but that is kind of like for the real heads. People are like, that's like the cool one to be like, oh, Fadley's is actually has the best crab cakes. I could be wrong about this. Someone correct me.
What's the difference? Is it just like the spices they happen to put in?
None of them are like that spicy.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably just like butter ratio or something.
Yeah, okay.
G&M, I have just always found it like kind of the quintessential perfect crab cake.
Yeah.
And they That's another thing. Like, they, pretty much all of them were frozen at some point. So
probably after they were formed.
Well, yes. Yeah. After they were formed. So it's like something along the distribution line. They've like managed to have it, have them like unfreeze in a way that works.
Yeah. It seems like Old Bay seasoning is truly an important part.
That's gotta be in it. Like, people go crazy with it, like, after the fact. I've never really been I always associate it with crab cakes, but I've never been able to taste it that much.
Okay.
Inside a crab cake.
Okay.
Worcestershire sauce. Always some kind of like binding, whether it's like mayo or like just eggs.
Just eggs, right?
Yeah. But yeah, those are like the basic things.
I see Tabasco a lot. How do you feel about that?
Tabasco, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've seen that too. I've maybe used that. But again, like everything sort of gets washed out. Like, I don't really see the point of just putting like a little bit of Tabasco. Like, you either do like kind of a spicy crab cake, or you're not really going to be able to taste it that much because you're just eating like a sleeve of Ritz crackers along with your food.
How do you feel about the sauce that goes along with it?
My tradition is to mix together the cocktail and tartar sauce on the side of my
and do plate. You like spread it across or do you do sauce. A dipping sauce party sauce
yeah
fun
I will dip it usually but on a crab cake sandwich I'll throw it right on.
Okay. That see, crab cake sandwiches to me just seem like a lot of starch,
and that's bad for you don't like that.
It wouldn't be my preferred method.
That's like that's like lunch the next day.
Okay. I see,
kind of thing.
A little corollary thing that I discovered, you know, dipping sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Until like the 70s, what we called dip was called dunk.
What?
Yeah. And the items that you would get the dunk with were the dips. So like your cracker was the dip and you would
Stop
put the
it.
Dip in the dunk.
That cannot be true.
Yeah, I think it really is.
So you would say, well, so the idea of chips and dip.
Right. I think that, God, and now that you say that.
Chips are dip.
Yeah, I wonder if that was like a marketing scheme, because it's fun to say chips and dip.
Right.
And it's, you know, rhymey and all that kind of stuff. But, and also dunk is like a grosser word. It's a funnier word, but it's not like as culinarily appealing.
I mean, you and I grew up with Dunkaroos, which is much more like a dip than a dunk. Do you remember
more
those?
Of a dip than a dunk? The dunker, you know, honestly, my parents were kind of hippies. Those are the dipping cookies, right?
That's a cookie dunk? With like either a chocolate or
yes.
vanilla cream.
Yes, Dunkaroos.
But, yeah, but it's not like dunking the cookie. You
spread it.
Scoop it. No, you like scoop it up with the cookie, which is more like a dip.
I think another thing is that dunks weren't as common. Like, it was like mid-century.
Dipping something into something else.
It wasn't very common until like the chip and dip platter.
Right. And it's like meat as a condiment, like all these things happening at once.
Yeah, a lot of cultural
where
shifts.
Where we're like, food is boring now. Yeah. Like, what can we do with this?
Yeah. But I think I'm going to start calling them dunks just for attention.
You mean like dip?
Yeah, like if someone has like buffalo dip, I'll be like, ooh, yum, dunk.
Oh, that's so
Isn't that gross?
Vile.
So you understand why they changed it.
I have to ask like my elders.
Yeah, an old person.
True.
What's
yeah.
a dunk? Oh. So there's this website called Old Line Plate, and it specializes in Maryland's culinary history.
Oh, that's
yeah.
the Old Line State. And so that's what the joke is.
Yes. I'm glad you explained it. I was assuming, but I didn't actually
know. I'll bet that flag is all over that site. Marylanders love that crazy flag.
Really?
Yes.
Point of pride?
It is so garish. Uh-huh. Like, it clashes in this, like, really, like, obscene way. But, yeah, for, like, no other state. California, the bear is, like, around.
Yeah.
But that flag is on every team jersey, like ever, like they incorporate it in some way. It's like black and yellow checkers red and white checkers with a cross, and then like two other squares that like are totally unrelated to the original squares.
Do you think that they made it garish on purpose for attention?
Yeah, I mean, they got to get it somewhere. It's like that in Delaware are really, when you're listing the states, you have to do them first, basically. You'll just never remember them.
I suppose that's true. Maryland sounds a little bit interesting. Delaware's just a tax haven, right?
It's just, yeah.
That's its entire reason for being.
It's just, yeah. Fake entities living there.
So here's a little weird thing. I got a lot of the following history from oldlineplate.com. Okay. I guess there's a story that some people tell that it was Native Americans who introduced the Anglo colonizers to crab cakes and that they had been doing mixing crab with cornmeal and frying them in bear fat. Mm. So this is a story that comes from the book Chesapeake by James Michener, which was written in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And I think Michener is how you pronounce it.
I believe it's Michener.
Michener. That's what it is. Yes. I haven't heard his name since high school. So this story probably isn't true. Michener probably made it up because it's not mentioned in any of the primary sources. Like, you know how when the British people got to the East Coast, they like just wrote down lists of everything that they saw, like all the plants, all the animals, and also all the foods.
Sure.
And amongst the foods, nothing matching the description of crab cake was included in that. Also, the natives of that region don't really fry stuff.
Huh.
They're about like roasting and like simmering stews.
Yeah.
So it would be like it's the only fried thing that they made. So that's probably unlikely too.
What I think is a strange thing. Yeah. To make up.
Exactly. And I think it's so weird because we deny indigenous people so much and then we make up a story.
Let's throw up this one.
Let's take away everything and give them crab cakes. What? But
yeah, that could be cool for them.
So weird. Such a weird thing. Crab cakes probably are actually a mix of two different culinary traditions, British and Afro-Caribbean, because Brits for a long time have been mixing crab with egg yolks and bread and making various preparations with that.
Like cold preparation.
Cooking them, but usually like if you have a baking sheet, they would like spread it across the whole sheet. There's here's a recipe from 1685. You take the meat out of the claws, you boil them, and then you flour them, fry them, and then you hit the body meat. You strain half the sauce out of it, but keep half the sauce, meaning like the fat part, the organs. You keep half of it to fry it up. Mix it with grated bread, almond paste, nutmeg, salt, and egg yolks. Fry all that in clarified butter. And then you make a vinegar and orange juice sauce. And then you spread all of that across the pan. Top it with slices of orange. Like cover it.
I don't know.
And then put parsley on it.
Oh.
And then you decorate it by, quote, you put the little legs round the meat. So you would actually decorate it by putting the small legs of the crab.
The orange crab. I
can kind of see it a little bit, actually, if you think about like Thai food, maybe, just in the sense of like meat and citrus.
But it's rarely certain fish, yeah, sure, but like orange shrimp.
Listen, I will say this. British food from the 1600s isn't famously good.
No. So, we had so many opportunities to like decide whether or not this should stick around, and we were
That is from a book called The Accomplished Cook by Robert May. The other part of that is Afro-Caribbean, because fritters are a big part
like patties.
Exactly. So frying stuff in small amounts comes from that. So if you smash those two together, then we've probably got the crab cake.
Cool.
So recipes like the one I just read, like different forms of that same kind of like overwrought nonsense show up for like the next 200 years. And then in the 1890s, there was this seafood caterer. He was actually based in New York City, but he was known as Terrapin Tom because he was all about the seafood. And we think that that is the first time that crab cakes show up in a cookbook. Hmm. But his were just, I don't know how he did it, crab, egg, salt, and pepper. No binder. Well, the egg kind of is, but no starch. A lot of crab,
maybe you could actually put a cake together, but expensive.
Right, and our oceans used to be a lot more teeming than they are today.
Right. Here's a question.
Uh-huh.
Why did we stop eating turtles?
Oh, we overfished them. We killed them dead.
That really is what, we're just out of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Americans in the Gilded Age got such a taste for them that they just killed all of them because they were so expensive for a while. They probably are as expensive now because they're all endangered species.
But we haven't Have there been attempts to farm them and stuff for consumption?
Oh, gosh.
Not that we should, right. But I'm surprised that it hasn't happened.
You know, there probably has been, but I wonder, you know how they live a long time?
Yeah.
I wonder how many years it takes before they're able to hatch eggs themselves.
Sure. So maybe it's just not worth it to watch them.
Yeah, and just hang out with them for 60 years before they breed and you can kill them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe we figured out why it doesn't. Because I don't know for sure, but that seems as likely a reason as
right.
any.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know how in different regions, people will have different names for the same thing?
Yeah.
Or the same name for different things.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a lot with crab cakes, too, because in the 1890s-ish era, some places would have crab cakes on their menus,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like that was a pancake with crab in it.
Huh.
Like the same way you would find a blueberry pancake.
That sounds good to me.
I think so. There are savory crepes.
Sure.
It's kind of like that, right?
And it's a great omelet filling.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you could do a good a crab crepe.
Yeah, I see it. And then there's deviled crab. Does the phrase deviled crab mean anything to you?
Is it like deviled eggs with crab?
They're not in eggs, but a lot of similarities in the sense that they take all the crab meat out and they save the shell and clean it out.
Yeah.
And you put everything back in the shell.
Yeah.
So kind of like how deviled eggs, we put everything back in. You cook it after it's been put into the shell. And the deviled in the same way for the eggs and the crab means spicy.
Oh.
Spicy, of course, being a relative term.
Sure. Yeah,
Baltimore
deviled
spicy.
Eggs. Oh, I can't. Too spicy. But it's crab on the half shell, and I assume it has the binding stuff and the breadcrumbs in it too to fill it out.
Yeah, and whatever recipe it is, it's just you take everything out of the crab, you mix it up, and then you put it in the shell and you bake it in the shell upside down. And this was considered something very fancy.
Sure.
In the early 1900s.
In New England, that's how they do the baked stuffed quahog.
Yes.
On the half shell,
mm-hmm.
which is mostly bread. There's very little actual animal in it.
That's
still.
Probably true for this one as well.
Yeah, and not spicy because it's New England.
So there's that. There's the deviled crab, except that in the Southeast, there's deviled crab, which is a big potato-sized crab fritter.
Okay.
So now we're
kind of
it's huge. We're kind of splitting the difference now, because it's kind of coming back into crab cake territory.
Sure.
But it's round and it's deep fried. It was invented in Tampa in the late 1800s.
Wow, Tampa.
Yes.
Inventing foods.
Do you know they also invented the Cuban sandwich?
Yes, I did know that. My parents basically live outside Tampa now. There's a place called Columbia restaurant that I believe is where it was invented. It's old for Tampa. And yes, they're very proud of that there.
So those deviled crabs are Cuban, essentially.
Oh, okay.
Cuban techniques, Cuban ingredients. Maybe you can actually answer this for me because I have done an episode about Cuban sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, is Tampa somehow a sleeper food city?
No.
Okay. All right.
It is. My parents live in Sarasota, so I fly into Tampa, and it's mostly just a process of getting in and getting out. I think it is one of the worst cities in America. There are like a few interesting neighborhoods on the outskirts, but it's mostly like a central business district that like fully shuts down at like 5:30 p.m. It was built horribly, designed really badly. Like, I don't think it has a huge amount going for it. You do have incursions of Cuban culture, and it is a pretty old city.
I was going to say, what happened in the 150 years back when they were inventing fried snacks and sandwiches and then just office parks?
Yeah, that is more or less what it feels like. There are some, like so many places around the country, there are some decent like breweries. Really, so here's the thing. It's split up. There's like Tampa and St. Petersburg, and when Tampa got shitty, uh-huh, St. Petersburg, like most of the like culture migrated over this bridge to St. Petersburg.
Okay.
Which is more interesting. It's cooler, has more history, probably more expensive. But like Tampa itself, like, really sucks. But it's all kind of the same metro area.
I wonder if we're going to get pushback on that, because I don't know why, but this podcast is really popular in Florida.
In Florida? Yeah. Well, like.
And it's never Miami. It's always the other cities like Jacksonville and Sarasota and all that kind of stuff.
I know so little about Jacksonville.
I know
Orlando,
Jacksonville is
basically
big.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're
I
all
don't know much
big.
About it either. So, listeners, if you want me to know more, let me know. I'm open to learning more.
I'm open
to learning that Hayes is wrong and that Tampa has amazing food.
The writer George Packer had a stupid article this week in The Atlantic that everyone was kind of dumping on, but he had this book called The Unwinding a few years ago where he did a whole chapter on just basically how Tampa just actively sold itself out to,
really?
To become the horrible place that it is.
When you say horrible, do you mean boring?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But also just a place that is the enemy of habitability.
Wow.
And like in favor of corporate interests and like office parks and
that does sound
it just became like very drab at some point in the like mid to late 20th century.
I actually really want to go to Florida to like the Gulf Coast area, like where all the oysters are and whatnot.
Yeah, like there's great food there.
Yeah,
eat a manatee.
Eating manatee?
No, you can't.
Okay,
really,
I was gonna say.
I'm pretty sure.
It's like, leave them alone.
And I also think you almost can't because they're all fat.
Don't also.
No,
I mean,
sorry. All air. That's inside.
Are they,
them.
Oh, because
like,
they're just floating around. Is
they
that
have
they have
float.
Air? Mm-hmm. I've read stories definitely about people hassling manatees and straight up getting arrested for it.
Yeah.
Like, don't. I mean, generally, I would say don't bother wild animals.
And they
animals.
Have big rules about like your boat propellers.
Good.
They get chopped up by them.
Ugh, man.
Yeah, they're like 90% lung.
Huh, good for them.
Yep. Something we can all aspire to.
Yes, definitely. They must be so strong.
Yeah.
Let's talk about racism a little bit, because it wouldn't
finally.
Be this show without it. So it seems like, especially in sort of like the Maryland area, during slavery, it was really quite the feather in your cap to have an excellent cook who was a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And usually a man, in the sense that, like, if you were going to brag about who your cook was, it was going to be a man because, you know, it was assumed that women could cook or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that they got, like, French culinary training and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you would go to someone's house and they'd be all, like, gross and condescending about how amazing the cook is.
Yeah.
And this person would be a slave. And then after 1865, one of the most common ways for emancipated Black men to make money was to be a crab man, which was someone who would make both deviled crabs and crab cakes and then wander the city in baskets. It's basically like mobile food.
Wow.
And selling them.
Yeah.
And do you know that they eventually all went out of business in like the 1910, like by 1910, it was probably all done because the prices of things like crab were rising, as prices do.
Mm-hmm.
And white people wouldn't pay more than 5 cents per item. So they had to go out of business because they couldn't make enough profit to continue doing it. And I just thought that that was, you know, not anything new, but the idea of being like, when you own a person, then you can brag about how good they are at something.
Yeah.
And then you don't own them and you're like, oh, I don't like, I'm not going to pay a lot of money for that, even though it's like the same recipes.
Yeah. I mean, and then it became like a big industry in Maryland not that long after that. And I doubt. I bet Phillips is white.
Tricky how that works, isn't it?
I bet both G and M are white.
Yes, yes. It's so funny how capitalism works over and over and over again. But I actually was thinking about the contemporary corollary to that, I think, is, you know, when people complain about like taco trucks charging like $1.75 instead of $1.50 for a taco?
Yes.
I'm like, oh my God, that's the exact same thing.
There's a standard of how much you are allowed to charge for this product, which should be, by the way, for a taco, way more than in terms of like the sustenance that you get
from the quality of some of these. Do you want humans to make a living wage?
Yeah.
Do you want the meat you eat to be not disgusting? That's actually one thing that I try and convince horrible people. That's the angle I go in on. Yeah. It's like, well, you're going to get sick from those ingredients because those are bad ingredients.
And they can be victimized by so many different parts of that supply chain.
Yes.
Like limes, I remember a couple years ago, like got really, really expensive.
Because of the cartels, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Avocado, of course, got out of control. But then LA Taco wrote that great story about how they are doing fake guacamole.
Yes. Not to trick anyone, we should state for the record.
Yeah.
It's just that they have found out that squash is a good substitute.
Yeah.
Which I think is fine.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I haven't tried the two different kinds, but everyone says, like, you cannot tell the difference. It's like the Calabacita blended up and mixed with, like, a couple other basic things that I forget what they are. And
it comes out more or less the same.
Avocado-free guacamole.
Yeah. Well, not the guacamole, the sauce.
That's right.
The avocado sauce.
The avocado sauce.
It's just like a green... You know what it is? It's a green sauce, and they let everyone assume it was avocado.
We didn't say. Sometimes it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think that's all something to think about when we pay for food. It's like, why not pay people a living wage? That's probably fine.
Yeah, it should be okay to think about doing. Yeah. I mean, for coffee, too. That priced the labor's priced it.
So when
you're saying I'm not gonna pay like $4 for this,
One's so hard because when coffee culture changed in the 90s and places like Starbucks were charging what we thought were unreasonable prices, I think that Starbucks was unnecessarily enriching itself. But then there's the people in the third world countries who are actually growing the coffee and harvesting the coffee.
Sure.
It's like, oh God, who am I mad at? Yeah. Anyway, everyone has to think about their food constantly, but crab cakes are delicious.
Crab cakes are the best and the worst food. That's what I find so fascinating about them. I think they are the best thing you can eat and easily the worst.
Why? Why the worst?
Well, no, I mean like the like between the good ones and the bad ones. Like the
I see.
The hard little air hockey puck things like that is as bad as food gets, and it is so disappointing, and you know as soon as it comes out that you made a giant mistake.
Yeah, I know. Do you have to cross your fingers when you order it at a place you've never been before?
I never ever ask a server or like any kind of like questions about like, is this like what kind of thing is this? Uh-huh. Except sometimes for crab cakes I'll be like, what shape is it? It should be basically a scoop or like closer to a scoop than a disc.
Okay.
I think.
All right.
Like the discs with the clearly defined like cylindrical edges.
Because you're like, that came from a factory.
Yeah. I want something that was like kind of hand packed together.
I think that scoop style is often used for crab Benedict.
Yes, which I also love.
I mean.
Yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Dunkin' sauce.
Yes.
Like you just pour hollandaise all over crab. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, that's the best.
Hayes, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Where can people...
Oh my God, I got to talk about crab cakes for an hour.
Yeah, you're the luckiest man on earth.
Yeah.
Social media. Where are you?
Hayes Davenport. That's it.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Bye.
The lady came from Baltimore, and all she wore was lace. She didn't know that I was poor. She never saw my place. I was there to steal her money, to take her rings and run. Then I fell in love with the lady and got away with none.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Here are the sources I used for this episode. Links to them all are also in the show notes. ScienceDaily.com had a report from Queen's University in Belfast that said maybe crabs do feel pain, after all. ScienceDirect.com had links to the journal Applied Animal Behavior Science. There's a piece that talks specifically about crab strength after declawing. The Washington State Department of Health, of course, has all manner of reports on paralytic shellfish poisoning, or, you know, red tide. There's a book from around 1460 by one John Russell. It's called The Book of Nurture. It's spelled like the Boke of Nurture because you know how they were back then. It had instructions on preparing and eating crab. He clearly didn't care for the whole process. He wrote in the book, "Crab is a slut to carve." Boy, ain't it. There's a website called foodtimeline.org, which is an amazing resource for people interested in food history. It isn't updated anymore because Lynn Olver, the woman who wrote it, she passed away a few years ago. I use foodtimeline.org as a cross-reference a lot, and for this episode, I made sure we were all in agreement about crab cakes and deviled crab. There's a cool site I came across called oldlineplate.com. The about page of this site says it is exploring the foodways and cooking traditions of Maryland. So unsurprisingly, I got some pretty specific information about crab cakes and crab cake history there. Smart Mouth is a production of Table Cakes, a woman-owned media company in Los Angeles. It's me. I'm the woman. Check out all of our shows at tablecakes.com. Have a nice week! A Table Cakes production.